aboard, you people. It is Starship Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis right here, 720 WGN. And we have in the studio with us, we are honored and pleased to have with us right now, actually sitting across from us, a person we talk to every week who's you know, in some distant land called Washington, D.C.
Some important place she checks in with us, but today in person, we're so happy to see.
The legendary A.B. Stoddard is with us. And first of all, you know, can we talk a little bit about why you're in town? Because I think this is interesting, because you do No Labels Radio for Sirius XM. This is an organization you've been involved with now for 4 years. Explain what No Labels is.
No Labels is basically a group that is, we're on a mission to improve bipartisanship.
And good basically luck.
How's it going?
And basically try to keep the government governing. And this is our system has just never been tested like it is right now. Tribalism is really trouncing patriotism. And we are not asking for a mushy center. We're asking for a place where partisans can come who are patriots and just try to get us moving again. And it's actually where I have a lot of momentum, and I think it's a really important
But have we gotten to a point, I mean, tribalism, you know, is, I think a lot about that, because that's always the beginning of the end of all the great cultures.
That's right.
It's when it breaks down into these, into, you know, very distinct streams, and then they all start to fight with each other, and next thing you know, they're killing each other. It happened once here before. Right. And it can happen again. To me, before we even get to tribalism, just the idea of what a fact is. There was a great story last week that America has an epistemological problem. We don't know how we know what we know anymore. And that's the beginning of it. And it's a blizzard that's being some of it is actually at the hands of our strategic adversaries here.
Yeah. The Russians are so incredibly focused and shrewd and smart and relentless. And just looking at what's happened to our reality in this country about this post-truth period that we're in, that we could not have imagined on the other side of it. And now that we're in it, we all just keep saying, wow, this is so surreal. But we feel so powerless to do anything about it. So the media is always getting beat up on, and then we try to fight back. We're just, you know, we're here for the truth. And it's
that CNN Apple thing got to stop.
When you think about we're a year away from another election, and we've really done nothing as the Russians are, and maybe in other countries are perfecting their active measures. Mm-hmm. They're really good at sort of rope-a-doping us and using using social media against us. And I know the Congress passed some sanctions to punish the Russians for meddling in our elections, and the president signed it, but I don't think that's enough. And I really hope people understand this is more of a problem long term than this is not about Donald Trump. It's not about 2016. Right. It's a long term issue.
It gets messed up in that. They just released today, though, that they had put out tweets from that were generated by Russian farms, basically, and they were picked up by mainstream media. And over the course of the last year, there were so many examples of just about every mainstream media organization fell into this trap of thinking it was a legit person
or a legit organization.
Or organization.
And they play both sides of this. I mean, they were running farms with people representing themselves to be Black Lives Matters folks saying incendiary things, with to be right wing folks saying incendiary things, and getting them to fight with each other and then bring people along. I want to something really important came out today as well. The woman who was a lawyer, Russian lawyer, who was in the famous now June 9th meeting at the Trump Tower with Don Jr. and all the rest of the folks there. She has now come out and she said, oh, yeah, remember, she didn't want to talk about anything, didn't want to talk about. Now she's come out and she has sat down at Bloomberg in a 90-minute, no holds barred interview, apparently, and has said, oh, yeah, no, we were talking about this. We wanted in order to give up the information we had, she wanted a repeal, basically. The Magnitsky Act, which is holding the Russian assets here, essentially, and keeping the assets in the United States. The same sort of thing we were doing with the Iranians, by the way, when we sent $1.5 billion back in cash to them. That was their asset we were sending back. Magnitsky Act is very similar in that it basically is holding all these assets that Russian oligarchs have here. And they want it. They want that to be loosened. And Trump, Donald Trump Jr., without you know, saying, oh, yeah, well, for sure, we'll do that. He goes, well, you know, if we come to power, that's how she phrased it, which is exactly how a Russian would. Mm-hmm. She phrased, if we come to power, you know, we'll take another look at that. We'll revisit that. Now, whether that's true or not, here's the reality. They're turning, the same people who are trying to get him elected are now turning on him, trying to get him deposed. Because all of that tumult, all of that chaos benefits them.
Right. It's all about distracting and dividing. And as if we're all turning in against each other, that undercuts our power in the world, our standing. They're unified. And repealing that law is a top goal of Vladimir Putin. He wants his money back. They know exactly what they want, and they know how to get it. And the more they produce churn here, the more they turn, whether it's about race or politics or anything, the more they turn Americans against each other, the better off they are, because we're losing our status as a superpower. That's a top goal of the Russians.
Right.
And the fact that we are now at a place where we might not even believe in our own elections is just beyond the imagination.
Oh, it is.
Yes.
It is.
Yeah, and things are not going to get better in the short term here unless we – well, they're not going to get better in the short term, but at least in the medium and the long term, we need to come to terms with this. And we need to – I think as a culture, we need to stay informed, stay open-minded, and remember that it is – like the way the Russians look at it, the Russians have always looked at it as us against the world. Yeah. Always have looked at themselves that way. Often they've looked at themselves as us against those guys, but it's within their own country. But that they have always been that. They've always operated from this point of cultural insecurity, and the United States has not. The United States has always been that, you know, that rambunctious teenage boy that was like, I can always win. He's the quarterback. He's going to win the scoring. We're going to score the winning touchdown. And because we, you know, at least in the 20th century, we've been like that, and it seems to be fading.
And we took it we took it for granted because it was so ingrained that we were the hope of the earth, we were the best, and that we would always rebuild, recover, revitalize, that we were just this sort of always reinventing ourselves. And we couldn't actually, what I was saying before, we couldn't have imagined being in this post-truth, surreal,
no way.
New place where we don't trust each other, and we don't believe that we can exert the same power abroad to protect ourselves here, but that we don't even believe in our own institutions. We don't believe in our neighbors. I mean, it's really stunning. And I agree with you. I really hope people become really aware of the consequence of this and become alarmed and become active in any way that they can, towards healing their communities or being active in restoring trust in government, like we're trying to do it in our labels. Whatever you can do, everyone can do something, and it's really important to push back.
All right. Stay right here. A.B. Stoddard is with us. And now we'll play a game show. I don't know.
What?
No, we're
not.
I can't draw her into one of these game shows. I swear to God.
It's way below her.
They're always nightmares whenever we try to pull them off on this program. So on the other side, we'll talk about what's happening in Asia, actually, with the president.
Yeah, it'll
be
important.
Did he really say that? That'll be the name of our new game show. All coming your way. But first, Violetta's got the WGN Traffic Travel Spots.
The Chicago area is on the cutting edge, turning different places into green spaces and saving money at the same time. Tonight's cover story, WGN TV News at 9.
Brokaw Show with Anna DeBlancis right here on 720 WGN. A.B. Stoddard is in the studio with us. You can read her on Real Clear Politics. Originally started here in Chicago, as a matter of fact. In Real Clear Politics, yeah, about that. That Tom Bevin guy, right? Wasn't he the...
He's got something figured out.
That's the guy.
The right people working for him, like A.B. Stoddard.
And now let's talk about the president in Asia. He's actually extending his trip. He's going to the ASEAN conference in the Philippines that was not previously announced. And he also went to a Trump hotel in Honolulu that was not previously announced. I had no idea there was a Trump hotel,
just
Trump property in Honolulu, but he went to that too. But he's in the headlines this morning is in Japan. He's kind of given what for, including, you know, the trade imbalance that he sees in Japan and begging them to build their cars here, telling them that you should really build your cars here. Shouldn't you build your cars? And they do build their cars here.
Yeah. You know, the people around the president will say that he knows that they are built in this country. But, you know, it's just...
But he thinks his people don't know. He thinks his partisans don't know, so they're going to buy that? That seems worse to me.
It's interesting. You never know with him if it's just like a riff or he really just checked out and didn't remember that or doesn't know. Really, I mean, when pressed in these kinds of situations where there's a factual question, people around him will just say he's just trying to make sure that people understand that that's what he wants. He wants American jobs and everything. You know, they won't tell you what he really knows or doesn't know. And it's apparently he's tired today, which I totally understand.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. But I think that everyone, and we've discussed this on the show before, around the world, who welcomes every leader on any global stage who welcomes Donald Trump knows exactly what's walking up those steps and what's going to come out of his mouth at this point.
It's true.
Nobody is surprised.
You know, AB, you've got a great, I just want to shift gears to tax reform here because the hope from the president is that it gets done by the end of the year. And you had a great article or a great column in Real Clear Politics about just that subject, but not only tax reform and how important that might be to the country, but to the Republican Party and the big schisms within the party, or the balkanization, I think you called it. There's a lot resting on this beyond even the legislation.
Yeah, I think I realized the week of the retirement announcement from Senator Flake and Senator Corker the very same day, saying that the president is going to leave a legacy of debasing the nation, or whatever many things he said that day were, that what undergirds the Republican Party, which is so divided, and the Democratic Party is as well, but that's another topic, is really shifting and sort of disappearing before our very eyes. They don't agree on anything anymore except how great tax reform is. They don't know how to pay for it. They don't know how to pass it. They don't agree on renegotiating NAFTA. They don't agree on repeal and replace Obamacare. They don't agree on really anything except our posture around the world, the importance of internet, of American leadership. They disagree on everything except the wonders of tax reform, and they don't know how to push it past the finishing line. So it really begs the question, what will the Republican Party be if they fail to pass tax reform? I think it's every man for himself. Steve Bannon's still shooting at everybody, and I think they know that. The only person who said it out loud is Senator Lindsey Graham.
Always easy to scream about change when you know it's not going to happen, to beg for something that you know you can't actually get, because make it as big and bold and populist and seemingly truthy as you possibly can. You know what we need to do here with tax reform is, first of all, these Democrats are spending all the money and they're gonna drown us in debt. The deficit's gonna choke us. There's a clock here. We're doing this. We're doing that. $1.5 trillion. We had one of the architects of it. We had two of the architects on last week when this was all going on. But Peter Roskam, the congressman from Chicago, he is one of the architects of it. And I'm like, well, what about that $1.5 trillion and adding to the debt over 10 years? If a Democrat had suggested this to you, this would be a non-starter. Well, that's a fair point.
I mean,
so they get it, but they also know that in order to get what they say they want, they have to do things that they knew that they wouldn't have ever done before.
Yeah. And it's so fascinating because while you see people like Mark Meadows, who runs the Freedom Caucus in the House, saying, yeah, we're up for deficit funded tax cuts, even though my whole career here has been about voting no, and I'm, a fiscal hawk and everything. Everyone is expecting opposition from who they think are squishes. Senator Lisa Murkowski, Senator John McCain, Senator Susan Collins. But you know what? Senator Lankford of Oklahoma, Jim Lankford, is a really conservative Republican. He comes out against the House bill last night saying it busts the deficit. I mean, this is what they were not expecting. This. They thought everyone was on board the deficit bus this time. And so it's going to be so interesting if you think about all those divisions, right? It's not only the quote-unquote moderates, but also the people who are going to stick with their fiscal rectitude, even though it's out of fashion.
Right. So I don't know. Well, you know what? Here's what happens, though. I notice this when I look at my own closet. Sometimes that crap comes back. And it just is what it is. All right. A.B. Stoddard, host of No Labels Radio on Sirius XM POTUS channel, and also associate editor and columnist at Real Clear Politics. A.B., thank you for coming in.
So much fun to be in the house with you guys.
Good to see you in person.
I hope you enjoyed the view. Violetta does not do anything right here. No, she doesn't. Judy does. She writes her news, which comes your way in 2 minutes. It's the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. Ben Bradley is joining us from the WGN TV newsroom.
Hi, Ben.
Hello, everybody. Happy Monday to you.
Happy Monday back at you. All right. Many things to discuss here. Most importantly is I just want to say what we learned earlier. It is amazing how much news breaks in the month of November that doesn't break the other, well, at least 9 of the other months of the year. When it's not breaking in February or May.
A lot comes out in November.
So I've noticed there's an incredible amount of stories that you know, just seem to pop right about here.
Ben's not taking the
bait. Perhaps a celestial event of some sort?
Yes, perhaps.
Yes.
Perhaps that's
it's
what
weird.
It is.
Strange.
Any big stories happening on the Channel 9 tonight, by any chance?
We're taking a look at Jackie Bang, I believe, is doing a story on sustainable housing in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Not your typical sweep story, which I know is the crude allusion that you were making.
Oh,
that wouldn't be.
You're always trying to tar and feather those of us in the TV.
Trying to make a living,
broadcasting business.
Yeah. No, I. That's true. That's true.
Well, so who is currently on CLTV.
Yeah, yes. I make a mockery of myself every day on television.
Some awesome work, though, and I will say that there was some. I saw the Patty Blagojevich interview that Julie Unruh did.
Yeah, Julie
I thought
did a great
that
job
was
on
an
that
amazing,
one.
Amazing piece of journalism.
And Mr. Pelsa has.
Now, wait, did you think it was an amazing piece of journalism, or did you think the responses were amazing from Patty Blagojevich?
Yeah, I thought the whole thing was just it was insightful. It was telling, you know, to see.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard not to feel for a family going through that, and yet, you know, you hear about her part in all of that, and we can't remember the tapes, her voice being heard on them.
Right. I always think when we hear interviews with somebody whose spouse has done something terribly wrong, and then they go out and do TV interviews to try to explain it, to try to soften the person, I always think, what would my wife do in that scenario? And I can assure you.
Oh, God.
He's guilty.
You know my wife.
Guilty of sin.
Yeah.
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 She's like, I always suspected something was up with him. I'm not standing by that guy.
Anna can attest to this. Your wife has actually come by our studio, pounded on the window, come in just to complain about you, and then left.
Hey, if anyone will listen to me, I've got some things I got to tell you about Ben Bradley.
I would say that's pretty amazing.
I'm going to tell you one story that sums up our marriage, and that is when our kids were really little. And you know, our first two were like 10 months apart. They were out of town with Molly at her parents' house for the weekend, and I was working, so I couldn't go. And she called to see how things were, and I said, gosh, Molly, it's so weird to walk around this house and hear how silent it is, and it feels weird. And mm-hmm. I just, you know, I can't help but think, like, you know, if I ever did something and screwed up, this is what my life would be like, just walking around this big, empty, quiet house. And Molly says, oh, no, honey, it wouldn't be. And I said, oh, really? You'd give me a second shot? She goes, no, you wouldn't be in the house.
Take that.
Yeah, that's really true, by the way. I'd like to point that. Yeah, I'm going to attest to that.
Is that how it works, Rob?
That's how it works, Ben. Okay. Yeah. And it is
your, so don't screw it up. Yeah, you got a good thing going.
Your wife is
true. You're a thoughtful, caring, sensitive person.
Yeah.
I wonder, would you...
Kick you out of the house?
No. We're not on from that story. Talking about in the Patty Blagojevich scenario, would you be on TV?
Look, I think that, you know,
standing by your man.
Would you agree to the interview, or would you stand by everything he did?
Two questions.
Because I think that there's part of it that's very human, and she's gone out on Facebook to describe this. I mean, the kids are totally.
Absolutely.
Innocent. And then they are no doubt suffering, and that's part mm-hmm. of our justice system. When your daddy goes to jail, your kids are harmed, and they have their daddy's not there. And that's, to me, there's a human side of that that does make me feel very sorry for that, for her and her family. But I understand. I mean, we all heard the tapes, and we know that. So it depends on what the crime is, I guess. Right? It depends on what the allegations are.
They think, and I believe that she believes, that this is totally trumped up, pardon the expression. There's a story about him and Ed Burke today. It's a separate issue. We'll get to that in a second. But that this is a completely trumped up set of charges, that he was doing stuff that everybody else does. It wasn't a quid pro quo. It wasn't a, you know, this is the way things operate. If they were really on the take, they wouldn't be living in that house and having, you know, problems with their bills, and he wouldn't right. be concerning himself with a $5,000 differential, you know, about a 3% differential in an income on a job. I mean, it was this all
well,
of that.
Also,
so that's,
if he wasn't spending tens of thousands of dollars on suits, that might have helped them make bill payments.
I think we've seen situations. Remember when Stephen Paddock, the horrible case in Vegas was found out, and they said, "Well, how could the wife not know? How would she not know?" Mm-hmm. And you felt like in that case she might have not known.
Right.
In the Patty
Bagoy,
you know, she might not have known.
Oh yeah. Oh, in that case.
In
yeah.
the Las right. Vegas situation.
Yeah, maybe
but
not.
In Patty's case, you feel
she
as
was
if
on the wiretap.
She was on the wiretap, and so there's a little bit more of a connection to the crime there. It's not like she was shocked and a total innocent
right.
in the situation.
And you heard the listen, vulgarity, I'm a big fan. I mean, it's
some
like,
situations call
yeah,
for it.
Right. And if you listen to my phone conversations that I thought I was having privately with people, they would be vulgar, and then some of them would be, you know, rather
okay,
off color in
them.
A lot of ways,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Ben's
so,
like, yeah.
Ben,
yeah,
Ben,
yeah.
I've been on the receiving end of those calls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ben's stipulating. All right. So the question really becomes this. If there weren't this kind of level of what we heard in that, there was certainly an intent to get something mm-hmm. for that Senate seat, right? And it was I was getting it for the people. I mean, they're trying to discount, you know, their relationship and their partnership in this, and they clearly I truly believe they love each other. I truly mm-hmm. believe that they want to, you know, raise good kids. And I think that Rod just looks at politics as an extension of show business. And he was just, you know, a massive entertainer. And he was going to, you know, he's going to practice politics the way that he grew up seeing it being practiced.
I think it's interesting, though, that their initial defense has continued to be their defense, which is the most Chicago of defenses, which is, you think I was bad? You should look at the other guy. Have you seen so-and-so? I remember when he was still governor.
Where are we hearing that now?
When he was still governor. And the scandal was everywhere. And I was hammering him with questions at a gas station mm-hmm. on the northwest side of the city after a press conference. He took me behind his state SUV with his bodyguards kind of blocking off the rest of the media for this. It wasn't an interview. Our cameras weren't allowed. But he was poking his finger at my chest saying, how could you ask me about what I've done? Go look at Richie Daley. Go look at so. And he's naming politician after politician. And he's been in prison now for 5 or 6 years. And his argument to the Supreme Court filed last week is essentially the same thing that he made to me at that gas station all those years ago, which is, hey, what I did is no different from everyone else. Why are you picking on me?
Like what constitutes illegal political fundraising?
Yes,
and
as opposed to remorse, as opposed to any type of kind of, I've seen the light, and it mm-hmm. was inappropriate.
Yeah, uh-huh. Like, you mean like a moment like this?
I don't want
speaking to of language.
Hold on.
It's hard to pick a clip
on behalf
that.
Of WGN
Sorry
Radio,
that.
We
I
had
apologize
to, take that
to our listeners.
Yeah. We played the wrong tape. We played the unedited
tape. This is from Rose's personal collection.
We apologize.
You know, some people do candlelight and soft jazz on a date. Ro does the Blagojevich tapes.
Oh.
Uncensored.
Oh. Wait, what was the bad part of that?
Yeah. All right. All right, Ben. Well, we'll see you on your WGN TV news. First of all, it starts at 4 o'clock. Don't you have
go.
To go get there right now? Okay,
yep.
go.
Bye.
4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, all of that coming your way on the WGN TV. Right now, Violetta's got the WGN Traffic Trouble Spots. Rokoncho with Anna DeVlantis right here, 720 WGN. All right. There was trouble in the city council today.
Oh, there was?
Yeah.
What happened over there?
There was the city council's most powerful member came under fire from a fellow alderman for filing yet another lawsuit aimed at winning a property tax refund for the hotel and vacant retail space at the Trump Hotel.
Oh, yeah.
So this Amaya Pawar, who isn't he running for something else too? Or wasn't he just
running for governor?
But
I believe.
Now he's not. Ran out of dough.
Yeah, he said that it's hard to be the little guy in that race.
He went after Ed Burke because of the chairman's decision to file a sixth lawsuit that, if successful, would deprive the city and its public schools of millions of sorely needed revenue dollars. The man who has demonized Chicago and immigrant populations. This only in Chicago, man. Did we get this kind of a? This is what goes on.
Strange bedfellows, too.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, that's how this is all set up.
Basically, I know Mark Sapelsa talked to us about this a little bit, that the Trump Tower was getting some breaks because they have unused retail space at its base. So that was part of the breaks that they were getting and entitled to.
And, listen, if they want to do business in Chicago, who are they going to hire? Let's just face it. That's how that goes. So and I happen to like Ed, and I happen to adore his wife,
Ann.
Justice Ann Burke. I was honored yesterday, actually, and in full disclosure, to give her an award, and it was, you know, but this is just one of those things. I mean, this is the Chicago way, and the Chicago way has a way, right? It's the Rokon Show with Anna DeVlantis right here, 720 WGN Chicago.
We've got the sun lamps on here in the studio. Very nice.
These are just desk lamps.
Just desk lamps.
These are
so
just
it's not
desk
the ones
lamps.
You have at home that
no.
help you simulate sunlight.
I brought lamps in here just now, Tom Skilling. I think you should know this. because of what you did with the time change. We're going to get to that in just a minute.
I know. I'll tell you. Here, I'm hitting myself now. I should not have done that. Harder,
Tom. Harder, Tom. I think you're amazing.
All right, wait, hold on. Here's the issue.
Yeah.
Now the sun is going to go down. We have these lights in the studio. We had to change something when they put this show and the Steve Cochran show on CLTV for 1 hour in the morning from 9 to 10 and 1 hour in the afternoon from 3 to 4.
Yes, indeed.
They installed these LED lights in the studio. That are just, that you know, basically screw into any kind of, like, you know, one of those track light systems.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Now, it gives off a light that apparently is helpful to make television look better, although there's no proof of that when you watch CLTV.
None whatsoever.
But because there's still ambient light coming in from our array of windows onto Michigan Avenue here. So it's still a kind of a grayish, grainy thing. The cameras are having trouble
adjusting. This seems to be something that's catching on because they've done the same thing back here in the weather office. Are they like these plates that have little bumps on them?
No, I wish they were. Those are the good ones. No. They went to Walgreens and they bought LED spotlights.
No expense was spared.
Yeah, or maybe the Walmart or
they're
somewhere.
At least Home Depot.
Right. Home Depot, okay.
Row strong. I don't know how you guys make it through that first hour.
Well, I'm going to just tell you this.
We're not done yet, Kevin. There's a lot more suffering going on here.
Wait, when it gets dark, like during the daylight, when there's daylight and they're just augmenting the light, it's almost livable. When it gets dark outside and these lights are on, it's like I'm willing to confess. I feel like I'm in, you know, like a World War II movie and I'm being strapped to a chair. I'm like, I can't. I have trouble. I have trouble adjusting to it. So we turn these lights off, and then we turn them off. There's only a couple other lights in the studio that work, so it gets very dark, and it's so moody, it's almost creepy. Then, so last night, I went to Target. It's the only savior. I went to Target,
nice job. These are really kind of fashionable lights. They're very cool looking.
I bought some desk lamps, you know, like the kind of cool. I'm a 70s retro guy when it comes to interior design. So I decided that I'm going to I went and I got these desk lamps. It would have been very fashionable in the 60s or 70s. Very Mad Men-esque.
Yes. They look like you went to some fancy store to buy them.
Oh, no. So Target.
It's a good Target purchase.
Target. These are Target. And we put them up in here. So when the sun goes down in approximately it's like 17 minutes, something like that, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
No, that's correct.
Yeah.
Only problem with these lights is they're really heating up. So if you touch the part right now, it's
are they
like
the old incandescent lights? Or are they
well, these LEDs? Are actually LEDs too, but they're a warmer LED.
You know,
because the problem with the LED is that when they first came out, and by the way, you know what? Thanks, Obama, because it's going to be because we can blame him for this when they started to get rid of the incandescent lamp. You know, like the incandescent light bulb.
Yeah. What, like you mean on streetlights and things like
everywhere.
That across the city?
Just the incandescent. You go and you try to go buy a regular incandescent light or a halogen light somewhere. Mm-hmm. You can't get it.
No.
You can only get LEDs now because of the laws, you know, because LEDs are more efficient.
Well, the other issue is they're kind of more blue lights, right? They're more of a blue spectrum.
Very, very tough.
People complain about it with the street lights too, because you have all those blue lights at night, not the warm light that you're used to.
Is that in part of the law now that we have to?
Yes, I thought it
was kind of just a cost measure, but
huge savings though. You're right.
They're
now part of the system here in Chicago and many other cities.
It's amazing how little light we in television operate on these days. I remember as a kid, we went in with the Indian guides to see Sherry Lewis and Lamb Chop at Rockefeller Center years ago.
Oh, my God. This story's going to go somewhere.
Oh,
that was a woman who used to stick her hand up a lamb and then would
make
cute sounds. Yeah.
Yeah. What they had to do, color television had just begun. So they had these giant, what they call TK-44 cameras. These are these monster things. And they needed that kind of lighting to get color to come across on television. Now, you're absolutely right, Ro. It's amazing how little light you need now to get a picture to come across camera.
The nice thing is that CLTV still uses the TK-44s in here to try to get the...
Is that right?
This is a technology that... The funny thing, they're using a robotic camera that's like a 10-year-old robotic camera, very different.
Yes.
Than the way they used to be.
Oh yeah.
So this is the CLTV presentation does look like we're robbing a 7-Eleven.
But you know, the unfortunate thing is those other lights gave off heat too. So
yes.
I imagine you've lost a heat source.
That's true. And they even say that about the city lights. They used to help melt snow, even in some cases.
Oh, that's interesting.
And now the colder lights they don't help with that.
I found something very interesting right now. We have one incandescent lamp. Or light bulb in Anna's light, and then I've got an LED in mine. Mine is super cool, and it's about the same color as Anna's, and Anna's is really hot.
But
is this
super
the same
hot.
Color?
Like, I'm going to burn myself on this.
Well, you know, this is all to the good. I mean, you know, we're cutting down on energy usage.
Oh, whatever. I'll tell you something. Let me explain what my problem is.
You're not feeling very environmental to
me.
I don't care. I'm like Al Gore. I'm going to get in a private jet and fly home. It's going to be three blocks, and I'm going to do it.
Buy a house on the ocean, though you think that the ocean's going to rise by 2020.
Right, I'm doing that.
I see.
Now let me say something here.
Something big is coming here.
No,
it's not your fault, Tom.
It's this time of year. So I've been doing some work around my house, and I got these guys are coming in. They were adding some light. Into the, you know, like ceiling, like kid lights for, you know, that look at things, right? That like, you know.
The track lights.
Track lights, but they're recessed. Recessed lighting goes into the ceiling and it does it, you know, it does whatever it's doing. All right, now, they put in these LEDs. And I'm like, and I had a mixture of the regular old lights, which are kind of warm and you know, yellowish, I suppose. There's more yellow in them. And they're kind of a warmer color.
Mm-hmm.
And then these LEDs that are stark white. And I'm like, are you kidding me?
I know. There's no warmth to them.
No.
And you know, it's the same thing with headlights. This new generation
Z9,
headlights, they nearly blind you. Do you find that?
Absolutely.
Yes, I do find that.
I think it's dangerous. These cars come at you and, you know, just with standard low beam lights and you can't see anything after that. They're so they're so all-encompassing, well, the light is from them, and very white, as you say.
Well, there is science on this, because I have a friend who is deeply concerned about this. It interrupts your sleep pattern if you don't have
the white
that. The white and blue lights, they can interrupt your circadian rhythms, and some people are quite sensitive about that. If you have one of these lights shining right into your house, it's blue light.
Yeah. And I believe that. There's something kind of comforting about a... You would think with the technology we have today, they would develop a way to come up with an LED light that gives us a little bit of warmth.
They do warm them up.
But here's the thing. Look at this as an LED right here. That's kind of the same color as yours,
kind of,
right?
They've warmed that one up.
Yeah.
Yes,
now they have warmed some of these up, but they haven't, like the ones that these guys put up.
Yeah.
In my place. For the weekend. So they did it on Friday, and I'm like, on the weekend, they're going, like, move around the space. They were coming back this morning to fix something else, or like, anything else you need to change. I'm like, by like noon on Saturday, I'm like, you got to replace these lights, man.
I think it was bothering you.
I bet that's true.
Be like putting fluorescent lights in your home.
It's exactly what it's like. It's like fluorescent lights. I mean, who wants to work? I mean, the thing is, it's bad enough when you have to work in a fluorescent environment. Right? It's bad. I mean, most people do. I mean, that's the way the world operates. Right? I was at a restaurant over the weekend, and it was like it was a combination. But if you combine these new LEDs with the old like regular light bulbs and get dozen light bulbs, it's like it like your brain fries, because you can't. Mm-hmm. At least for me, I can't make up the difference between the two types of light.
You know, it sounds crazy, but I know exactly what you're saying. It's not crazy. It really does affect the way you feel.
Yes. It does. Over a long period of time for me, but I think Ro is more sensitive to these
issues.
Very sensitive to these
issues. Oh, Anna.
I know.
We found another
a rough winter for all of us, if you know what I mean, Tom.
Between shorter days and all the rest, you've got your work cut out for you.
Oh, I got the blue light on every day. Uh-huh. I got the sun, the thing which is just interesting, because the sun, those sad lights, seasonal affective disorder lights, which I've got in my office at home. I know. It sounds like I'm crazy, right? Does it sound like I'm crazy?
A little bit.
Anyway, the point is, I've got that, and it's got sort of a bluish cast to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it what it does, it mimics the blue sky, is basically what it does. So I've got it up high. I turn that on. I sit in a little tiny little windowless office with this thing on, and it's like it's daylight all the time. It's like Hawaii all the time. And then I got like on my computer, I put that like a beach scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just
you're out in the sunlight in the tropics.
With my nose up against the screen, I just keep staring at it.
I've never seen one of these light panels I hear about. Are they white light too, or do they?
No, they're this bluish cast. I'll send you a picture of this.
Yeah.
They're not big. They're the size of a...
Are they kind of like ultraviolet? When although you don't want to look at ultraviolet, but
it's like a white bluish light. It gives the light, like if you look up at the sky right now.
Yes,
the sky right. If for those who can see the sky, it gives you that sort of sense of light, that it's that skylight blue, sort of.
Well, then you don't seem as bothered by that, right?
Now 19 minutes until sundown.
Yeah.
It's now 19 minutes until sundown. I don't know how we're going to do this.
Do you know something, though? Isn't it amazing how early the light comes up? My alarm went off this morning, and it was like the sun had been up for...
What time is sun up? I'm never up for it, so I have no idea.
Even
when it's 9 o'clock, I'm not up for it.
I'm up for you. 6:28 is morning was 6:28.
So it was 7:30, essentially.
Yes.
Through last week, which is tough.
It is.
Right? I mean, and in the depths of this, it would be, coming up in about a month and a half, at the Christmas time, it would be, if we didn't do daylight saving time, it would be somewhere around 8 o'clock, right? The sun would be coming up.
Yes.
And that's what people are freaked out about. Not me. I want to do away with standard time.
You just wanted the daylight time. Well, that's what they're talking about on in New England, right?
Yes, and I think they should be doing it here, because we're the furthest east. In the Eastern time zone, central time zone. So we get, and in New England, they're worried about it because it gets dark at like 5 o'clock there. It gets dark at 4:20. So by the time we're at the very depths of this, it's going to, by 4, the sun goes down at 4:19 in Chicago, it's very earliest. And by about 4 o'clock, you're in twilight.
Right.
because of the angle of the sun.
You would love Anchorage, Alaska, Fairbanks,
God.
You know.
He would not.
Why do you
don't send him there.
Don't even talk about things
don't
like
send
that
him there.
Right now.
And everyone I know is going to Iceland because of those $99 flights. You wouldn't want to go there either, Ro. I don't
you
know. Even though
can
I do.
You imagine Rocon in January or December up in Fairbanks, Alaska?
No.
The sun comes up at about 11:15 and it goes down about 2:30 in the afternoon. So it and then if you go farther north, it never comes up. You know, you get a little period of dusk up north of the Arctic Circle. You never see the disk of the sun.
Oh my
Can
gosh.
You imagine living in that? There's a lot of trouble with alcoholism in northern latitudes.
In Wisconsin, just think about that. I mean, it is not a coincidence.
No.
That Wisconsin leads a nation in morbid obesity and alcoholism and morbid alcoholism.
I was thinking more in terms of like Russia and Scandinavia and Alaska.
I just can speak to Alaska because I can speak to Wisconsin because mm-hmm. I am not part of the Russian attempt to steal the government here. So I could say just in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. It does lead the nation in both those things, you know, alcohol related deaths and morbid obesity, and it's all because it's cold and dark.
Well, you know, some people have real troubles with that. There's no two ways about it, and it's biological. You know,
yes, I'm one of the. Are you listening to the
I
show,
am listening.
Tom?
I'm feeling your pain, Ro. I'm thinking. I'm wondering what we can do for you, you know?
Maybe 14 a minutes. The sun's going down in 14 minutes.
Stop maybe
a
coddling
ticket to
him.
Cancun or something like that, or, you know.
Yeah.
Down to
Well, you know, last year we went to Mexico as a team, and that kind of helped.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
So maybe we need to do something.
You
got to
get another show set up down there.
Quick.
Fly down.
Yes.
You went in March last year,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, beginning of March.
Yeah.
That was perfect because we came back the day that we went back into daylight saving time.
Yeah.
So it was like,
let's go back.
Yeah.
Let's go back.
Oh, Kevin chimes in. Yeah. Well, you know, I could tag along with you. We could do
Yeah, Tom, come on.
We could do hurricane research, you know, in the winter, off-season hurricane.
Yes,
research.
Exactly.
It'll be like a field trip.
Yeah. It could possibly go wrong.
Something like that with margaritas involved.
Yeah. Right.
I love that.
Yeah.
This is sounding great.
It is.
Get both together.
Wait, so when's this happening?
Yeah. And we could do studies on, SAD and the psychological implications of shorter days at the higher latitudes.
Tom, would you mind doing that study, and I'll just be on the beach waiting for the results?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, Violetta, you can come along, and I'll call you every now and then to take a couple of notes
in.
And then let you go back out to the
Perfect.
Beach again, you know?
Okay.
We've got it planned here, guys.
All right, sounds good.
Like
see you guys
quite
there.
A plan.
Yeah, it's fine.
You should do that, though, Rose. Seriously, it's always fun to kind of break up the long, cold winter anyway. So
sun's going down 13 minutes, Tom.
Oh, my God.
Bro, please. You got your light. What else do you need? You're all set up with your warm LED.
Have you noticed the difference in the light just in the time Tom's been on?
Not really. No, I haven't.
Really?
No, not really. Have you noticed, Tom? Are you near a window?
No.
No, he's in the middle of it. He's got the worst circumstance. Talk about fluorescent lights.
Well, and talk
9.
About a weather office with no windows in it, you know? I just...
it's brilliant.
It's not right.
I'm sitting here. Now, I'm looking at a camera scan. We scan through all of our,
weather
downtown
sites.
Cameras. Yeah. With off the Hancock Building and the Sears Tower. So they were blinking. Now, I've got a shot of Lakeshore Drive. It's looking... There. Now, I'm getting a shot of... The skyline is viewed from the Willis Tower.
Tanya, it's 25% darker since we started this conversation. And in the next 12 minutes, Tom, the sun's going to go. I keep moving the time here. Wait a second. Is it 4:39, right? 4:39?
The sunset?
Yeah.
So let me see here. I've got it right in front of me.
Yeah.
That's what I have, 4:39.
Yeah, didn't you?
4:39. Okay, so it's 14 minutes away now.
I should have this right here. Here it is. Okay.
I found 4:38. Sorry, Ro.
God. Yeah. Oh, God. You just stole a minute from me.
I know. I'm sorry. That's what the...
You know what? I've got the heating degree days here.
It's a pretty
here.
Set
it
number, isn't it?
All right.
I mean,
4:39 today and 4:38 tomorrow.
Oh, my God.
And it comes up at
tomorrow. A minute a day.
It comes up at 6:31 tomorrow, or this morning, and it'll come up at 6:32 tomorrow. So...
Okay. So is there any good news in the forecast for us, Tom?
Well, look, we don't have a snowstorm coming. We missed the severe weather went south of us this weekend. So that was good.
Yeah, still a lot of rain though, man. It was soupy.
It was.
Yeah.
People sent me the most beautiful pictures though of their windshields with different size drops on them. And that doesn't sound
very exciting. That's a pretty picture.
But it was kind of interesting to look at it. I'd never had anybody send me one like that. So I got a couple like that.
All right. So, Tom, we got
to
go.
Okay, Rose. I hate to leave you. I feel like I'm leaving a friend in distress.
Yeah. In 11 minutes.
But
11 and a half minutes.
We'll take good care of him.
I know. That's it. So
thanks, Tom.
Guys, happy Monday to you.
Oh,
and, Roe, hang in
sure.
there.
Sure. Yeah, okay.
It's only November.
Right.
But you know what? Spring is coming.
Winter is here.
That's
all right. Thank you, Tom.
Okay,
appreciate
guys.
It.
See you later.
Bye, Tom.
Here is Violetta with the WGN Traffic Trouble Spots. Ro Khan Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN.
Are you going to change your name, Ro? Because Puff Daddy is now Love Brother. And
yes,
I didn't know if
and he says he will not respond to anybody who refers to him as Sean, Puff, Daddy, or Diddy. And the damnedest thing is, with the exception of Sean, which his mom named him,
mm-hmm.
he refused to respond to Sean until he was called Puff Daddy. Then
mm-hmm.
Puffy, and then Diddy,
mm-hmm.
and now he's Love Brother.
And he said, don't even try to email him, text him, call him, address him.
Okay, guess what?
By any other name.
Here's an interesting thing about him. No one is trying to do any of those things with him currently.
That's not true. He's very successful.
He is, yes, as a producer. He okay. just and always he wants to be the guy in the middle of the stage, and he's never going to be that guy.
He's a hard. He has the hard alcohol company. What's that again? He's got one of those beverage Ciroc. Companies. Yeah.
Good old Ciroc. Gets you in trouble. The vanilla one. Tastes like sugar.
Oh, they have a vanilla one?
Hmm. Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, it tastes like sugar. It's vodka, actually. It's not,
yeah,
it's
it
not
is
sugar.
Vodka.
Yeah. All right, I want to talk about something of great import, actually. This is a story that was breaking over the weekend, and I happen to believe, and this is why I want to talk about it,
mm-hmm.
This is a story that is probably the most important international development. Forget about what's going on right now with the president overseas. Obviously, he's on his way to North Korea, and he tweeted, we'll figure it all out. It's all meeting with the, or he's on his way to South Korea, I'm sorry. South Korean leader is going to meet with President Moon of South Korea, and he literally, that was his tweet. We'll figure it out. Like, we'll figure it out. Don't worry about it. We got this. That's all really well and good, but there's a story developing in the Middle East that I think has incredible implication here, and that is of the rounding up of Saudi princes in an attempt to consolidate power along the lines of the current king of Saudi Arabia and the crown prince of Saudi Arabia, newly minted crown prince of Saudi Arabia. And they've literally arrested, although they have placed them in protective custody at the Four Seasons Hotel.
Ritz-Carlton,
Ritz-Carlton Hotel.
So it's quite the detention center.
Right, in Riyadh. That's what they do when you're a prince. But they're basically trying to grab up their money, and this could have huge implications in America because one of these princes is a billionaire who's a major investor in American companies, including social media companies.
Mm-hmm.
Very
could
interesting stuff. Ishant Tharoor is with us. He is with the Washington Post, and he is a foreign affairs correspondent for the Post. And Ishant, let's talk about the current situation here. Let's just go back to explain why it is that this now father and son, the king and crown prince, are doing this in the first place. What is the speculation?
Well, there's a lot. First of all, thanks for having me on, guys. Good evening. It's obviously a very opaque and complicated picture. We're talking about, of course, a country that's ruled by one royal family for nearly a century. It's incredibly opaque. And so a lot of what people, an analyst are talking about and officials are talking about is really speculative, as you said. It's you know, it's like criminology, but in this case for Riyadh. So what we're seeing is, you know, in 2015, King Salman ascended to the throne. He was the half-brother of the deceased king, Abdullah. Mm-hmm. And in the months that followed thereafter, you saw King Salman consolidating power around his son, who is this prince whose name you should all know, Mohammed bin Salman. He's 32 years old. He's very young. And he is quickly elevated to being a crown prince early this year, brushing aside other figures in the royal family. And he is projecting himself as this great modernizing revolutionary figure within the Saudi state. He's driving all these this huge agenda of economic reforms. And so, as you said, yeah, a lot of the people who've been detained have been princes and potentially political rivals of his. But he's also detaining these businessmen to send a message to the greater Saudi population that he means business and that he is going to be cleaning up corruption, which some say is endemic in Saudi society. That's their argument.
But the first time you, and we'll get to your analysis in a second, but as a setup for that,
sure.
Whenever you hear that kind of thing, that's the sort of thing that you do hear from dictators, that when they have to make sweeping reforms and they have to arrest other people in the political class. And again, this is a kingdom. This is not a democracy, right? And it's an iron-fisted kingdom. And we put up with a lot of things with Saudi because they're friendly with us. They had for decades the key to the floor of oil prices in America, and they have a lot of ties here. But this is the kind of thing that generally when you see, you start to think it's unstable. What does it actually relate to? So what is your reporting telling you about what's really going on there?
I think it's a bit of both. There is clearly some anxiety and uncertainty within the Crown Prince's faction, and they want to consolidate power. But they've also, and apparently, I mean, of course, the other thing to mention to your listeners is that the Crown Prince, his name is Mohammed bin Salman, he has made very strong and productive connections with the Trump administration. Jared Kushner visited Saudi Arabia last month, and they had a very long meeting. And so there's a sense among the officials and analysts that I've talked to that they're acting with a kind of blessing of the Trump administration, both to consolidate power and then, as far as the Trump administration is concerned, on the foreign policy level, to take a much more active and confrontational line with Iran. Because while this purge was taking place over the weekend, the Saudis seem, if you listen to some versions of the story, seem to have engineered a new political crisis in Lebanon. They've declared Iran, they've said Iran committed an act of war recently over the weekend when a missile from Yemen was fired into Saudi territory. So there's a lot of things happening at the same time. And a lot of it does have the tacit blessing of the White House.
Wasn't one of the princes killed in a helicopter crash near the Yemeni border?
Yes, that's another thing that happened. The prince was killed in a helicopter crash on Sunday. We don't know very much about the nature of that crash and whether it was an accident or not. There's, of course, a lot of feverish speculation.
Yes, one would imagine.
Yes.
The Middle East is where feverish speculation was invented.
Especially at a time like this, with so many other things happening, you wonder, coincidental or not. The one prince, and I can't pronounce his name, that one you talked about, the one who is, I think, holed up in the Ritz-Carlton, mm-hmm. has so many investments in major investments in American companies and that kind of thing. It leads you to believe he would be a friend of America, and yet he's the one being put aside being corrupt, and the others are allied with the Trump administration, is what you're telling us. Is this the ones who have been cast aside? Do we know where their allegiances lie?
As I said earlier, it's a very murky picture, so there's no easy way you can connect all the dots. But I mean, a lot of the people who have been detained among the princes are from different bloodlines in the royal family, different power centers within the court. One of the guys who was put there was used to be the kind of major sort of advisor, point person within the court, a kind of, you know, master of whisperers type figure, and he's been put away there. So there's clearly a kind of they're sorting out a lot of their rivalries in the process.
Totally Game of Thrones.
It's like Game of Thrones with sand instead of snow.
This is Varys getting put away in detention, basically. That kind of figure.
Yeah.
Again, it's not as simple as saying, oh, this guy is pro-U.S. and this guy is not. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of...
Well, they hate a lot of people before they get to us. Yeah, I mean, that's and the war in Yemen, I mean, it's on their peninsula. It's, you know, across their border. The Saudis, there's no question the Saudis want to make sure that they maintain control of the entire Arabian Peninsula. It's, you know, mostly in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. There's a ton of sand. Right. I mean, it is a ton of the coastline is really, really, really important to them. And the coastline includes the Emirates the UAE and all the rest. And Yemen, which is a gigantic coastline. Mm-hmm. And they would like to make sure that they have influence over those places. And Yemen has been sliding and sliding and sliding away and become a client state of Iran over the last number of years. And it has been it's the second headquarters, if you will, for all the major Wahhabist terrorist organizations of the world. You know, with Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. There's a question about ISIS there now. They've got a lot of bad guys in Sana'a, Yemen. And this is a really, really, really important juncture in the war on terror, and it's happening right there. And are the Saudis going to be on our side with all the interdiction that is going to go on there? Or are we going to come to their aid and put boots on the ground in Yemen? That becomes a really big question here. That's still to be seen, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if I can clarify a couple of things you just said, Yemen has never been really a client state of Iran. There is an Iranian connection to a faction there that the Saudis are fighting, but it's always been much more in the Arab world's orbit.
But of late, the concern here is that the revolutionaries are being funded by the Iranians, right?
There is clearly some kind of connection to funding, but it's not the same way, you know, the way that the Iranians really prop up Hezbollah in Lebanon. It's not that direct of a connection, although the Saudis try to argue that it is. What they've done in the past couple of years in this protracted war effort of theirs is, you know, really reduce the country to a pretty desperate state through blockade, through bombings. They've killed a lot of civilians in the process. And this is with the blessing of both the United States and Britain and other countries. And the bombing campaign has not really been effective either.
Yeah.
And at the same time, as you said, absolutely, completely a footnote to what's happening in Yemen is the fact that there are these Al-Qaeda-related groups. There is some kind of Islamic State-affiliated groups operating in separate parts of the country that have basically been flourishing no matter what the Saudis do. So it's a very complicated situation. The U.S. has been running drone campaigns and drone strikes there for years now,
right,
dating back to the Obama administration.
They try to get the mad bomber there, the guy who's the designer of all these, the printer cartridge bombing and some of the other, the underwear bomber. All that they believe was designed by this guy in Yemen, and they've been trying to get him for years and years and years and years, and they thought that they did get him, and then they weren't sure they got him, and then they got him.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot going on there. All right, well, we'll have to leave it right there, but Sean Tharoor, thank you so much. Appreciate you being with us, sir.
My pleasure.
All right, all the trouble in the world is happening right there, by the way. What's not happening in North Korea is happening there. Just want to point that out. Just want to make everybody feel better now the sun's gone down. Violetta! It's a Rokan show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN.
Our favorite time of day, except today it's dramatically darker than it was before. Sorry to bring that up.
I am not in a good mood about this.
I know.
Wait till they put all the Christmas lights up, then you'll be in a good mood again.
That will help.
That does help. That starts this week, actually.
But then the music starts nonstop. That doesn't help.
It's the most wonderful time.
Thanks, everybody. You're really helping me. Because the lights are being strong right now. There's traffic stopping on Michigan Avenue because they're stringing lights and putting holly and garland and stuff like that in the middle of the roads.
Decking the halls.
They're decking the halls, and they're screwing up the middle of the day traffic here. But if you're stuck on the Kennedy right now on your way home, and you were on your way home on Friday, and there was still sun in the sky,
mm-hmm.
Sort of.
There was.
And now you're driving home, and it's dark, and it's the traffic's not moving. All you're thinking about right now is, oh, my God, wait till the snow hits. This is bad now. Wait till that happens. I know. I feel your pain.
Yes,
you Why do. Doesn't anybody else feel our pain?
Row strong. You'll get through it.
I already used my seat warmer like twice last week.
Oh, my God.
That's how you know
that is first world problems right there.
That's how you know it's getting cold.
Yeah, it's true. Although what Tom just said is fascinating.
I thought that was too.
There were only 88 days with a temperature at any point in a day below freezing in the last 12 months.
So
now don't you feel bad?
No, but think about that.
Yeah,
that doesn't seem right.
I mean, that is crazy.
For Chicago?
But I was freezing anyway. I got my big coat out.
It's like Florida now.
That is not the point, Violetta.
It's the opposite point.
Try to think a little more globally.
Well, break down that statistic for me and tell me what that means.
That means there were only 3 months out of the year here in Chicago, a city known for being very cold,
mm-hmm.
in which the temperature dipped below 32 at any point, including overnight.
But we haven't hit the cold months yet.
No, in the last year, full 12 months.
The point is it's warmer than it used to be.
To explain this to her.
Well, I thought you meant in the last, I was like, well.
No, I did it.
Kids okay. these days not even have to deal with cold temperatures.
I know.
Making them soft.
I know. It makes it very soft. Millennials.
Millennial punks.
That's right. Thank you, Kevin.
He's a millennial,
probably
too.
Living at their parents' home in the heat.
you're much better than us now, huh?
Probably mooching off their mom and dad with the temperature jacked up. It's all warm in their cozy house.
You've been out of the house.
Mooching off mom and dad.
Wait till you get your first heating bill. Oh, this is going to be good.
Kevin's going to be complaining.
I'm always hot, so we probably won't even use the heat that much.
But you've been out of the parents' house for how long, Kev?
It's been like 2 weeks. So.
Yep.
How are you holding up?
I'm an expert now. I know
it's been 10 days.
All about living on my own.
Sounds better. 2 weeks.
Millennial punks probably at home still.
Yeah. There he goes. Mm-hmm. All right. You know what? Yeah.
He's all grown up.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's
no
what
big
he is.
Deal. Grown up.
The top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right, checking in at
number five.
Senator Ted Cruz was in Sutherland Springs, Texas today in the aftermath of the shooting yesterday. He was asked about gun control.
10 to 20. You know, it is an unfortunate thing that the immediate place the media goes after any tragedy, after any murder, is politicizing it. We don't need politics right now. You know, I would note in New York, we saw a terror attack just this week with a truck. Evil is evil is evil.
I think it's not lost, though, the fact that, you know, that speaking of politicizing,
mm-hmm.
I think that everybody does, and he's politicizing it as well by taking the bait on that. You know, he's playing in the politics of that because mm-hmm. we shouldn't talk about guns right now.
But let's talk about trucks.
So. Yeah, that's a way of creating political cover. But I think it's I think it's interesting that the president, when responding to both of those attacks, to the one in New York a week ago, and then the one in Texas yesterday, he referred to the driver, the Muslim driver, as an animal last week. He referred to the Texas shooter as deranged and sick.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's worth making note. The president was asked by a reporter about what policies he would support to reduce the frequency of these attacks. This is while he's in Asia, was asked about this.
I think that mental health is your problem here. This was based on preliminary reports, very deranged individual, a lot of problems over a long period of time. We have a lot of mental health problems in our country, as do other countries. but this isn't a guns situation. I mean, we could go into it, but it's a little bit soon to go into it. But fortunately, somebody else had a gun that was shooting in the opposite direction. Otherwise, it would have been as bad as it was. It would have been much worse. But this is a mental health problem at the highest level.
A lot of people are wondering why he was able to purchase guns with his record of domestic abuse, with the fact that he was dismissed from the military, with bad conduct. That the Wall Street Journal has a story this afternoon about how the U.S. military failed to submit the conviction record of this gunman, Devin Patrick Kelly, to the FBI after his court-martial conviction.
Right.
So that's the lapse that could explain why he was allowed to purchase the guns.
All right, checking in at
number four.
The way John Kerry sees it, President Trump's strong rhetoric against North Korea will only encourage the rogue nation to escalate international hostilities and continue with their weapons testing. In a conversation with Christiane Amanpour, the former Secretary of State thought that Trump had stepped over the line by suggesting that a unilateral attack against North Korea could be imminent.
I think what the president needs to do is make sure that he's not feeding into North Korea's fear of regime change or of a unilateral attack or otherwise. And I think the rhetoric to date has frankly stepped over the line with respect to the messages that are being sent. It's given North Korea reason to say, hey, we need a bomb, because if we don't have a bomb, we're going to, not be able to protect ourselves and they'll come after us. So we've got to get into the dialogue. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to happen overnight. Lots of negotiations have taken a long time.
Okay. Well, we have, good luck. He's in Korea now, the president.
Mm-hmm.
And he tweeted, don't worry, we're going to work it out. And apparently he's also listening to this program
on
the app, because we were just talking about Saudi Arabia, and he just tweeted about Saudi Arabia.
Immediately after.
Yeah. Find that very interesting.
Coincidence? I think so. But we'll go with it.
I'm going to go with I think not, but you go ahead with you think so.
Okay.
Thanks for helping.
No, I'm sorry.
All right. Violetta's got the WGN traffic trouble spots.
The Chicago area on the cutting edge, turning different places into green spaces and saving money at the same time. Tonight's cover story, WGN TV News at 9.
All right, here we go. Top 5 continues up to
number 3.
In California, Dennis Rodman weighed in on the president's trip to Asia.
Oh, thank God.
And he made this plea to the POTUS on the eve of his stop in Korea.
You've been to North Korea. You've met Kim Jong-un.
Absolutely.
So the president calls him Rocket Man. How do you think he feels about that nickname?
And the one thing about Donald Trump, hopefully he does one thing. The fact that he needs me to do one thing, North Korea. And the one thing I think that the military in North Korea should do one thing, it's love right there. It's very love. Donald Trump, please help us. You always say unite. I'm all about that.
So you trust Donald Trump has the diplomatic...
I trust Donald Trump. We've been a friend.
Did he say he needs me?
I didn't understand a word of what he was just saying there. First of all, because the truck is idling in back of him. That's a truck that is about to board the crazy train. That is Dennis Rodman.
He did say, I trust him. I trust him to handle it. But I thought he said he needs me. The de-escalation of World War III in the hands of the worm, a man who once married himself. It doesn't feel comforting. Although he is one of the few individuals to have met with Kim Jong-un and the president.
I don't know where
that leaves us.
No, you know what? I just wanted that to sink in. I think that that's important. I think we just need to stop on that note.
Yeah,
that this is where we are
true.
In the world.
But
Putin couldn't be happier. The one guy who the United States can use or can depend on in this situation is Dennis frickin' Rodman. One of the NBA thinks he's crazy. Just think about that for a second.
Oh, boy. We got problems.
Yes. That's why people can't sleep at night.
Number 2.
Farewell, Diddy. We hardly knew ye. Yeezy.
They had a good run.
Yeezy's someone else.
I know.
Don't get that all confused.
The 48-year-old rapper announced on his birthday that he has once again changed his name. This time, Sean Puffy P. Diddy, Diddy, don't call me Diddy, Puffy, or Sean Combs.
Right.
Now will only respond to being referred to as Brother Love.
I decided to change my name again. I'm just not who I am before. I'm something different. So my new name is Love, a.k.a. Brother Love. I will not be answering to Puffy, Diddy, Puff Daddy, or any of my other monikers, but Love or Brother Love, okay? It's my birthday. I feel good. God is the greatest. I give all glory, and I thank my mama and daddy. Mwah!
Is Mr. Love okay?
Did he score a touchdown? Because that's the way you often will get that, like in a post-game interview, all of those things that he just said.
Yes.
Like to thank God.
Yeah,
like
give all glory to God. To thank my family, mom and dad. It's all good. And I just want to say that, you know, it's a team effort. We all have really had our each other's backs tonight. And we're really, really proud. And
but then they don't end by saying, you can't call me by the name you called me by yesterday.
Generally, they don't.
No,
unless it's like Dennis Rodman.
Included.
He would say something like that. And P. Diddy. You know, the weed is just getting stronger, I think. I think that's what we learned
there's
there.
Something to that.
It's a devil's lettuce picking up steam.
Imagine being Puff Daddy's banker.
Oh, boy. I got some name change paperwork
handled again. Exactly.
AKA. He's got a lot of reasons to have a banker, too.
Yeah.
I mean, he's on the Forbes list, this guy, for entertainers. He's done very well for himself, but he keeps changing his name, and it's darn confusing.
Maybe we should try all that. He's had the success changing names. Maybe I should try that.
K-Love?
K-Love, yeah.
K-Pow?
K-Pow.
You said K-Pow. Just K-Pow.
Oh, yeah, K-Pow. I like that.
K-Pow. And actually, that would be, you could go work in a radio. I'm sure there's a K-Pow somewhere, radio station.
Probably.
At 720.
K-P-O-W. The
K-Pow. I'll reveal the name at 720.
Oh, gosh. What's happening?
Kevin Powell on K-Pow.
Oh, gosh. Oh, no.
K-Pow in the morning. On K-Pow. 420 and 720.
All right. There you go.
Oh, gosh.
Okay. That's what it sounds like. That's how that goes.
I love it. It sounds great.
The POW is now on K-Pow.
POW is
mornings.
Now. Your morning juice with K-Pow.
All right. Are you ready? And finally,
I think so.
Let's get us out of this.
Number one.
All right, it's been a year since Donald Trump was elected president of the United States.
Since Election Day, yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
365 days since the last Election Day. So Alec Baldwin's portrayal on Saturday Night Live just won't let up. This week, they opened with Baldwin as Trump, visiting former campaign chairman Paul Manafort, who had just been indicted but was under house arrest in his apartment.
I brought you to the shower to make sure you weren't wearing a wire, Paul. That's why we're going to do this Gone Girl style.
Mr. President, I would never do that with you.
That's what she said. Like a whole bunch of she's have said that. Speaking of which, what an idiot that Harvey Weinstein is. He could have gotten away with all of it if only he'd gotten himself elected president. Body wash.
Now, it's interesting because that they ended up with a lot of criticism over that.
Over that one comment?
Over that one comment. This just tells you again how tribalized we are. Back to what A.B. Stoddard was talking to us about at the top of the show. We are so tribalized that everything that they're every joke on Saturday Night Live essentially now has its own debate forum and its own constituencies that are for and against the joke. And the everybody apparently was against the Weinstein bit because the pro-Trump people were like, there he is again doing Trump. Then the anti-Weinstein people were like, you can't joke about that.
You're talking about Larry David's comments.
No, the Weinstein, what you just heard right there. The Weinstein joke that he just made. So the people who are opposed to there's a whole kind of Hollywood response now to this, the aggrieved response of those who, you know, and anybody who's gone through being harassed or being, you know, felt like they were their sexuality was on display for somebody who was in a position of power over them. Right. So there's a whole political line that follows from that. And they were all mad at Saturday Night Live and specifically at Alec Baldwin for that. And then you get to and then there was the Larry David, that you're talking about, the Larry David joke about the Holocaust.
Because that's the one that grabbed all the headlines, that was the most inappropriate joke. People were unanimous in weighing in, it seemed, on that.
And what's interesting about it's like Louis C.K., who did the bit about pedophilia last year, seemed to be doing the same kind of, Larry David decided to go somewhere that no other comedian could go.
Mm-hmm.
Which was, how do you pick up somebody in a concentration camp, was the center line of the bit.
Right.
So it was, oof.
Yeah.
Even me, I get what he was doing. He, as a comedian, was trying to expand the boundary. And I think in a comedy club, that joke would have worked. I don't think on network television it worked.
Maybe it would have gotten some boos, but it would have passed. And their social media took over right away, emphatically saying, hey, right, come on. What was that?
All right. Okay. You know what it's time to do? It's time to get out of this thing. Why am I here? I didn't want to show up at this moment. I'll tell you that right now.
The top five at five.
Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here, 720 WGN.
Have you seen all the craziness going on here at Michigan Avenue here? Pioneer Court right next to us, along the river. First, I thought it was an Apple Store thing, but it's not.
No.
It's like a crazy little pop-up thing.
It's a pop-up thing with the Google Home system right next to the Apple thing. And notice how Google just did a little pop-up store next to the Apple deal?
Take that, Apple.
Yeah, next to the big Apple. The Apple Store, to beat all Apple Stores now, is right here in Chicago on the river.
No kidding. It's
this
beautiful.
Is an architectural marvel, they say, that they are going to wish to design all of their Apple Stores like this one in the future.
It will be hard, though, to not have the backdrop of the river, which makes a glass building.
They'll build
impressive.
A new river.
Yeah, so build,
this
right.
This is Apple.
This is right. They can do whatever they want.
So they'll do a virtual river, make you think you're seeing a river, even though you're not. It'll be augmented reality. There's a river over there. You just don't have your correct Apple product to view it.
Right. But for $1,244, you can get one.
Then don't drop it.
And wait in line for 7 hours.
See how many people are posting pictures of their broken new iPhones already?
I did.
They said more durable glass. My butt.
Yeah, how is that possible?
What are they taking pictures with, though?
Like their old digital cameras and like plugging them into their laptop? I don't know.
They had their friend take a picture of it.
Someone who didn't drop the phone.
Is it? So it's not durable. For $1,000, it's not durable? Or is it the 8?
That's what it's... No, it's the new one. People
the 10?
All weekend. People are dropping them.
I hope
them.
They bought that.
It's like $200 to get them fixed.
Apple Care.
Yeah, the Apple Care. For a $1,000 phone, you better.
It's a good investment.
Is that like their insurance?
Yes.
Basically?
But once you trade your phone in, you also get credit. So it's not really like a $1,000 phone.
Like, that's just if you bought it straight up.
Yeah. Right, how much credit? Like $20?
No, like $700. No, $500. I think if you have the 8. So.
$500? Mm-hmm. I find that hard to believe.
Well. What? You can search it.
I have a 5, so
all right,
I don't
you
know
people,
what I
get. I don't want to have a fighting over here.
Yeah.
Anyway,
behave.
So here's the thing, is that people are standing in line right now, and then they have an opportunity. They get a box, and the box either has 2 free donuts in it,
mm-hmm.
or the Google Home system.
The iHome Mini.
Whatever.
Yeah. Well,
Now, Violetta told me about this earlier, and I literally couldn't get past donuts. I was like, did you get any donuts?
Yeah, I was trying to tell her, and I'm
are
like,
they giving away
listening.
Donuts?
What does the iPhone Mini do?
It's like one of
Google
those devices
Mini.
Where you tell them to do something in your house, like play music, order this, do that, and it searches it for you and does it for you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like that name we're not supposed to
yeah,
say.
Yeah, that girl's name.
Right.
We don't
Alexa.
Say.
Okay.
See, you're not supposed to say it.
Shh.
What's the
turn
weather?
Off?
Hello?
Stop,
how Alexa.
More
stop.
Careful could we have been?
Play WGN Radio. Wait. If actually if that worked, you'd already be playing WGN Radio. Hold on. Don't say turn off. That's a don't say
no,
that.
No, let's no. turn it back
no,
on.
No, don't say that.
Oh, sorry. Oh, anyway, instead,
oh my
this
goodness.
Is the
I'm trouble. I'm sorry. Got us in trouble.
Everyone, we talk for a living. I'm just pointing that out. Let's all get our words straight here.
So the look.
We are told, by the way, for those who are not following this problem, we have been told not to say that word, the A-L-E-X-A word, because it's triggering. This is a radio-wide problem. It is triggering people's home systems.
Yeah, well, mine
when
goes
we
off
it.
When for the from the TV. They
mine
say it on
too.
TV.
Mine yeah. goes off even if there's something that sounds like that.
And, it kind of makes me laugh, and then I just tell her to be quiet. I don't know right. why people get so upset.
Exactly. I mean, no harm.
But always play WGN News.
Because it's you.
Yes.
It's actually, I think if you tell her to play Chicago News, isn't it you?
Mm-hmm.
Depending yeah. on the hour. I think, because I've heard other people on it.
Well, it's our newsroom.
Yeah, it's us, though.
Newsroom.
It's WGN. It's the best news. So
it is. It's great.
Play it
really
all the
is.
Time.
It's the best
why
news.
Why are you laughing, Kevin? It's, of course, it's the best of ever. It's
Trump,
the best yeah. ever.
It's no Trump. Everything's the best.
It's the biggest. It's the biggest and the best.
This is an Apple. Hey, No, it's not. I guess it's a
Google.
It's a Google. No, that's Google.
That's Amazon.
I'm sorry.
This is Google, the first thing.
So if you're in Pioneer Court today...
No, it ends at 6. You better run over
no,
there.
No, 7. It ends at 7.
The news All right. Six. Johnny Depp is in the news.
Oh, you're changing the subject? Why? That was going so well.
By the way, there's going to be a video up on WGN Radio about what's going on in Pioneer Court, if you want to check it out.
Is Johnny Depp at Pioneer Court? What's he in the news for?
No, he's in a
I don't
movie,
know why
though.
Everyone's not rushing there for the donuts.
I don't know why everybody's talking at the same time. Johnny Depp is in the news.
Okay.
He had a rough trot over the past couple of days. Writes the Mirror UK. So that's the kind of term they would use. Oh, it's a rough trot.
The headlines are great.
Because you got it. Because now, and Johnny thinks he's British, so this whole thing's working out perfectly.
Mm-hmm. He's from Kentucky, but somehow he's British.
Now, his fans are worried about him. Because the 54-year-old was appearing at the premiere of The Murder on the Orient Express in London.
Mm-hmm.
On Thursday, which, by the way, now I guess I don't know. I should ask some millennials this question because I wondered about this when I saw the first commercial for this movie.
Yeah,
the ending of this movie is kind of a surprise ending, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But if you've read the book or seen the original movie, I don't understand why this is going to hold your attention when you find out what the ending is.
Maybe
one
they
of
feel
things.
There's enough separation. You guys, do we?
Do you
even
know what the
know?
Ending of it is? Do you know what the Murder on the Orient Express is at all? Did
yeah,
you,
yeah,
did you
yeah,
ever read the
bell.
Book?
I feel like I've maybe read the book.
Okay.
Doesn't everyone die?
They had a good run.
Yeah, no. But,
let's not reveal it here.
Yeah, we're not going to reveal it. But that's the. But that's not it, which is good.
So they're still on a good run.
Alexa, what's the. End of Murder on the Orient Express.
Don't do that.
Anyway.
Oh, gosh. Now somebody wants to go see the movie is finding out, and they don't want to find out.
That's hilarious.
All right. Now, let's do this. So Royal Albert Hall, Thursday night, mm-hmm. Johnny Depp. They said, my God, look at Johnny. He's so drunk.
I don't know. I mean, sure, there's a lot more that you can sort of explore in that regard, but I don't know if a villain ever really thinks he's a villain.
That's very true. That's very astute. Incredible cast that you had to work with. That must
shocking.
Have been a delight.
It was shocking. First that amazing
yeah.
human being. Sir Kenneth.
Sir Kenneth.
Sir Kenneth.
I know.
Mm-hmm. Again, we'd like to point out that Johnny Depp is from Kentucky.
But he's sounding less British. Have you noticed?
That was less British?
Yes.
Well, it was highly
Listen
drunk.
Listen to her and compared to him.
Well, that was an Irish accent, I think. Sharon,
yeah, I was going to say, what
Scottish
is...
Accent. Scottish accent.
Yeah, maybe. I feel like he used to be much more British. I think he's losing his, you know, British polish.
I don't think so.
See, now you sound British, but
you know
you
what
didn't
else he
in
lost?
An interview.
His girlfriend.
Yeah.
Amber
to who?
Heard.
To who again?
Oh, you shrew. She's a shrew, you're a shrew.
Elon Musk, I believe, the founder of Tesla.
I always have to bring him up. This was just a story last week. They lost trillions of dollars.
He'll get it back.
But he can afford to lose it. Someone else can't.
Right, because... it is correct that there's a story about my accountants and lawyers now saying that I have to sell every single one of my homes. And that still isn't going to cover it.
Oh, poor guy. $50 million last year wasn't enough to live on, unfortunately.
No. $50 million doesn't go like it used to.
Oh, gosh. Now he's lost it.
Yeah, it's really quite astounding how quickly it can go. First of all, I would like to say that I am all for whatever the tax cuts are in America right now.
That might help a little bit.
That's a very, very important point I'd like to make right now.
But, Johnny, you still can't spend $2 million a month, which is what you were doing, apparently.
It was very hard for me to realize. I thought I was just spending $1.9 million a month.
You were.
And then they told me that it was
a couple of months.
$2 million. And I'm like, that's more than I thought.
But you also bought an $18 million yacht. And
I do. Right. I don't need homes anymore because now I have the yacht. And I'm going to live on the yacht, and I'm going to actually become a real pirate. Because there's a whole I have left.
He's halfway there.
That's what he's turning into. He's
it's basically, gonna, right.
He's going to end his life as an actual pirate.
That's exactly what...
You know, Captain Jack has been very, very good to me, and I think I'm going to be very good back to him.
So you're going to go around robbing people?
Do we have the drunk? Okay. So this is, drunk Depp? Do we have the drunk Depp? That's what he was like. Now, just let's slow him down and do the drunk Trump version of Johnny Depp.
I don't know. Sure, there's a lot more that you can... sort of explore in that regard, but I don't know.
That's enough.
You hear the British accent.
You almost
more.
Can understand him more.
Yeah.
Slow down, because
it sounded totally fine to me.
Crystal clear.
Absolutely crystal clear. I think it's completely sober, and obviously I've not had a single drink.
All right, here is Violetta with the WGN Traffic Trouble Spots. It's the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. It's dark as hell outside. That's all I want to say.
Oh, my gosh. Is it midnight?
It's 6:10. When does the drinking start?
So weird.
All right. But you know what? Speaking of drinking, you know that includes water. And what includes water? The Water Reclamation District. You see how I just worked this whole
Excellent
thing
Excellent segue.
Yes.
That was so well done.
All right. I have with us the executive director of the... Metropolitan Water Reclamation District of Greater Chicago. This is an organization that's got a very nice building. I never understood what goes on in it. We're going to find out. And Trey Clark, who's the Director of Strategy for Uptake, a Chicago-based predictive analytics platform.
Hmm.
Oh, that's interesting.
Smart tech
now,
guy.
All right, so now that you may be asking as you're driving home and you're stuck on the Kennedy, well, why? Well, here's why.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out, and I do actually have a very important question I've been asking myself almost my entire life. About the Water Reclamation District and the Deep Tunnel project, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a deep tunnel. Is that we keep building the deep tunnel and we keep hearing that, well, the deep tunnel, I mean, it's
going to take care of our problems.
All the water, like, we're not going to have flooding. We're not going to dump our poo water
into
the lake.
Great.
We're going to have, it's going to be fine. There's not going to be, it's all going to go down the deep tunnel. And they just keep digging the deep tunnel. And I've never been down the deep tunnel. I'm assuming you guys have been down in the deep tunnel, especially David. You've probably been down the deep tunnel, right?
I have been.
How long does it take to get down there, to the bottom of the deep tunnel?
Well, it depends on how you go. If you just jump, you'll get down pretty quick.
Oh, boy.
But we can drive.
How deep is it?
We can drive you down and take you less than 5 minutes.
How hygienic is it down there? Because Roe doesn't go to non-sanitary environments.
Well, we have McCook Reservoir coming online this year, so we could take you down.
Oh, I don't go to McCook. I don't want to get pulled over. What is the how deep is the deep tunnel?
A little over 300 feet deep.
300 feet deep. And how big is it? How far does it go? It starts like down by the... We're like off the Stevenson there, right?
Well, there's actually three systems in the Chicago region in Cook County, and mm-hmm. two of them are completed and actually working very well.
Mm-hmm.
The last phase is coming online this year, McCook Reservoir, and it serves mostly Chicago area. And we'll see a significant improvement in terms of flooding and all kinds of issues, overflows in the Chicago River.
These are going to be backups. Well, let's talk about the kind of flooding that the Water Reclamation District is supposed to be taking care of. And that's what we're here to talk about, that you've got this new thing coming online. And after these years and years and years of talking about this, we're finally going to get somewhere. Is that sort of the concept here?
Well, we've actually made a lot of progress over the years. And what's funny about progress is when you improve things, people get a taste of good and they want more.
Yeah.
And so we've been working real hard at bringing that online. One of the things that's going to help us a lot is really getting into the technology age. You know, my partner here and some of the tools that he brings to the table are going to help us control the system better and really look at things differently in water.
When you say predictive analytics, isn't it weather dependent? Or what other sort of factors are you looking at when you're trying to predict the future
sewage? That's a great question, Anna. So taking a step back, you know, Uptake is a homegrown Chicago-based technology company, about 3 years old. And employing almost 1,000 Chicagoans here in our building just down the road.
Oh, wow.
In the Groupon building. So same founders, Brad Kuehl, Eric Lefkofsky. And so when we talk about predicting the future, what we mean is all these big industrial machines, be it a pump or compressor or a blower, or if you're a locomotive or a wind turbine, a gearbox, all of these big machines emit and transmit data, okay, temperature, pressure, speed, location. We also have access to work orders and maintenance. And like you mentioned, weather. Uptake, we're in the business of aggregating this data, ingesting it, making sense of it, and then notifying people like David when these big components are going to break.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not predicting the weather as much as we're predicting, you know, these systems and subsystems, the health of these rotating pieces of equipment, if that makes sense.
All right. So that's important.
It is important.
Right? Because that's the stuff moving the poo water. And pardon me for calling it that, but that's what it is. It's what we're trying to deal with here, runoff and other that's happening. I mean, it's the kind of water you don't want to have contact with, essentially,
and
right?
And people really love when our systems don't fail and they work as designed.
So yes, sure. We love that.
Really
now,
good.
Now, so the situation like we had in Lake County earlier this year that stretched its way down into Cook County and never, you know, the Des Plaines River, which seems to be totally useless. I don't know why we don't just board the whole thing up. But what is what we're doing here going to help that? I mean, if this were online, let's say McCook were online during that in the spring, would there have been a market difference?
Well, McCook's really not going to impact Lake County. What happened up there is happening all across the country.
But as the Des Plaines River was flooding as it was heading south.
As we are seeing weather changes, right? I mean, people don't want to face that. Some people don't want to face that, but we are seeing them. And we are having... In Cook County, every year, at least somewhere in Cook County, we have a 100-year rain event. And so those types of events, we are doing a lot to address
those. We
should
really rename those, I think, don't you?
I don't know. You know, a couple weeks ago, we had a five-inch rain event, and we really had a lot less calls than we've seen in the past. And it's really due to a lot of things that we're doing across the county to really build the storage and capacity to build a resilient Chicago. So it's something we remain focused on. And certainly new technologies and new ways of looking at things are going to help us get there.
So when we did have that event a couple of weeks ago, obviously the new Riverwalk flooded, right? Which we were told by the alderman was designed to flood in a situation like this.
Okay.
You know, they know that this is a possibility because you're right there. If you've gone to the Riverwalk, you could see the river's right there. I mean, it's not
very
like,
close.
Yeah.
Yes, sure.
And as a denizen of Chicago for my whole life, and I used to work a block away from the river over at the other place, and we had our windows looked right down onto the river, you would see the river after major rain events take on a different hue in terms of color Well, I think that's safe to say.
It's very safe to say. And this weekend it made news that it was two-tone. There was like the teal color, and then there was sort of the brownish color. And everyone's like, well, look, we've got a two-colored river. What's that all about?
Or do we know what that was all about?
Well, we do. We actually, as you know, it's a very natural river. Well, not really.
It's going the wrong way.
We actually reverse this river. It's a man-made river, and it's more man-made downtown, more cut out of stone than mm-hmm. it is in the section that flows from the north of the Sanitary Ship Canal. So that section of the river flows through a dirt bed, and as it flows, it stirs up and it collects suspended solids. As any river does.
Suspended solids.
Well, that's that could just be
is that
dirt.
Is that a name?
You can think any way you want about those suspended solids, but really it's dirt. And, yeah. and okay. we're in the Muddy River Basin, and that's just where we live.
Yeah. I thought that was something else.
I know what those are. That's a separate issue.
I've heard all the jokes.
Okay, all right.
So you haven't heard them all. Wait till the show's over. By then you'll have heard them all. All right. So, but that's I guess the issue here is in terms of the river flight, the kind of event we had a couple of weeks ago. Do we think that would be positively changed here with the with McCook coming online?
Absolutely. And we're starting to see those changes already.
And how does that work? Explain a little bit about the mechanics of that.
Well, we have this huge system. It's 35 times larger than any system that's been built in the Midwest. I mean, huge. So 20 billion gallons of capacity at the end of the day. And just to think about what does 20 billion gallons mean, that's 2 inches of rain in this region that the system can absorb. Now, all of that doesn't hit everybody at once, mm-hmm. but that is a lot of capacity.
Okay, so now once it fills up, I've always wanted to know this about the deep tunnel. Mm-hmm. Once it fills up, what? Where does that water go?
So Thornton, that has been completed, we put on 7.9 billion gallons last year, 2 years ago. The fullest it's filled up about 30%, and that was in a 6-inch rain event that was down south in a very short period of time. Hmm. So the capacity that we're building can really absorb these big events. It is
but
an amazing
once
system.
It's in there, where does it go? I mean, like all that water was in there.
We send it through the plant, we treat it, and we prepare it for being introduced back into the environment.
And then where does it get introduced back into the environment?
At four of our treatment plants.
So you treat it, and then it goes back into a water supply somewhere.
Into
the rivers? Okay.
Right.
And is it more the teal color or is it the brown color when it goes out there?
It's going to be clear now. You know what we should do?
I don't know.
Here's what I'd like to do. I would like to bottle it and sell it to Evian France. Just to and sell it back to the French and so that they get the stuff that they were sending to us, but then they get it back after we've treated it.
I thought theirs is from the French Alps.
Yes. Ours is from the beautiful Chicago River. They'll never know the difference.
It has a different ring to it, though, yeah. I think, than Evian. Cool.
We'll call it Thornton. It's from Thornton.
Okay.
That's what happens.
Yeah, mostly it's clear, except around St. Patrick's Day or, you know, mm-hmm. if the Cubs win once mm-hmm. every 108 years.
Yeah, or any Friday or Saturday night. There doesn't seem to be, but once it goes back in, so you hold it. So the idea is you got a big rain event. Because, again, these are so many questions. Everybody hears the term deep tunnel, but mm-hmm. they don't know what it means. So you get this gigantic rain event, let's say, you know, 5-inch rain, whatever it happens to be. So this tunnel, this big hole, essentially, absorbs the water goes into there, right? The runoff goes into there.
Correct.
How's it get there?
It goes through the tunnel system.
Through, like, the sewer systems and then in the tunnel systems and
yeah,
through the river.
Yeah, we have a deep tunnel that's 300 feet deep. And the tunnel itself holds about 2 billion gallons of water.
But it's coming from the sky. I know this is going to sound stupid,
it
but
does.
It's coming from the sky. Thank you. And then where does it, and then where, how does it get into the tunnel?
So in a combined system like Chicago has, uh-huh. the stormwater goes through the street inlets and the storm system all goes into the same system that everybody uses.
And the suburbs and everybody, they all have that.
Now, a lot of the suburbs are separate systems, so they don't have the stormwater that flows in. But Chicago is a combined system predominantly.
Because there's so much concrete here too, right? Because there's no absorption, so you got to send it somewhere. All right. So then it goes in and it holds there. Obviously, the treatment in the middle of a storm, you don't want to send it back out into the rivers, right? So it's held before it's treated and then sent out. So it's staged.
We pump it through the plants, and we treat it, and we release it.
At a certain point,
you do that. As clean water.
Right, but at a certain point, you do that. You don't do that. It's not always going.
It's clear.
Yes, he's got that
Can
part.
You swim in it? Is the other question.
You know, I've jumped in the river system 3 times now to make a statement on how clean the river system is now.
Oh. We should do that as a show, Ro. We should go swim in the river day.
Okay, you first.
There you go. Yeah. I'll make sure you get invited.
You start with that.
See, well, Dave sent the invite out.
They said it's kind of nicer over by the fork or the, you know, the split, the, you know, dividing of the river there, the north south, like Wolf Point and stuff like that. It's cleaner over there than it is. Wait, no, it's the other way around. It's cleaner by the lake, right? Because the water flows in from the lake, so it gets diluted there, and then you get there, you should be a little, you know.
By then, it's a little murkier.
It's
is that
a little
right,
murkier,
Dave?
Yeah.
Over,
is that
murkier
right?
Over by Wolf Point.
It has more suspended solids.
Oh my gosh! See? There's that word. Those words again.
That's what he's saying there. All right. So, is there ever going to be a moment? Do you think, Dave? And maybe, I don't know, maybe Trey can answer this too because he's you know, you're working on analytics here. Mm-hmm. But is there ever going to be a moment where the river is going to be completely safe for swimming and for, you know, fishing and whatever else one does in it?
Yeah, I think just like the lake isn't safe for swimming 100% of the time. Mm-hmm. You have rain events where you have avian
birds.
Yeah,
bird poop.
Causing problems that wash into the lake. You'll always have days like that in a river system. It's a natural body of water. So you're not going to a swimming pool. You're going to a natural body of water. Mm-hmm. And natural water carries with it all kinds of things that at times are not safe for
people. To the answer, I think what we're hearing is no. And I know that's, I mean, I know that, I get it. It's natural. That you never know what's going to happen. And in a situation, you're going to have runoff and things like that.
Let's make it a lazy river.
You seem pretty healthy.
Not according to myself or my doctor, especially myself.
So probably for you, you could jump in anytime and probably be just fine.
Yeah, I think that's what you're suggesting, and I wouldn't blame you after this.
And I will make sure you get invited.
Yeah, I would like to see the deep tunnel. That would, you know, before I go, and I mean it, before I go, I would like to see it because I've heard from people who've gone there and seen it. Uh-huh. It is an amazing thing.
It does look pretty spectacular.
It's gigantic, right? I mean, it's sort of, and it's right there. It's below, and it's like a 5-minute elevator ride down to the bottom of it, or down to whatever the.
Yeah, it is amazing. You should take the time and go see it. Yeah. And you're always welcome.
So
is it dank down there? Is it sort of musty?
No.
Is there a stench? No.
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 How full has it been at its highest?
That was the max ever.
Well, the tunnel system has filled up. It fills up about 50 times a year. But with the reservoirs added, we haven't had Thornton fill up at all.
Hmm. Okay.
It really has performed
amazingly. Is Thornton the McCook one?
No.
Or McCook is new?
No, Thornton is called Thornton.
Thornton. Oh, Thornton South.
We call McCook
Thornton
McCook.
South, and McCook would be Southwest. Okay, I got it. All right, I get it. All right. I can't keep up.
The big tunnel.
Yeah, it's a big tunnel. Well, you know what? We're going to send you. I think you're the video queen. We're sending you.
I'm kind of getting claustrophobic just
thinking.
What is it, 300?
You and Water Wings. Where did you jump in the river, by the way?
I jumped in the Cal Sag, and I jumped in at Ping Tom Park. So
in Chinatown.
In Chinatown.
Yeah. I feel like you're going to push me in.
I wouldn't.
No, not you, Ro.
Yeah.
Ro would.
Yes, I would. I might hold her under for a while. I don't know. Pull her back up right at the last minute, like in all those movies.
So did you swim or you just went in and then was the photo op and you came out? Or what'd you do?
Yeah, we just jumped in.
You just jumped in just to show that you could.
In a scuba suit or?
No.
No?
No, I'm a true believer.
Oh.
I just remember when I had to go cover the flooding of the river, when the river flooded into the downtown Chicago and all of us stood over there. Near Wolf Point on a guy's boat dock, and everybody did stand-ups. The city health department came and gave us all shots for standing there next to the water.
Standing?
Yes. That is true because we were having contact with it because it was lapping up, you know, during, you know, there was weather at that point. We were down literally at the
Did
the
you get
water
a shot
line.
When you jumped in, Dave?
No.
Toughen up.
This was years ago, though. This is why I'm so healthy, Dave. This is exactly what happens.
Rub some dirt in it.
All right. Well, I think we've learned something here. I'm not 110%. All I know is that Trey's got something worked out right now with analytics.
He's going to save us.
Right. That's got the machines are working right. And then we got then we also have we got a new thing coming online, so that when it does rain, this as we head into the really rainy part of the spring, we can still get some stuff here in the fall, right?
But we do, all right.
But the spring is when it's really going to be, one would imagine, needed. We've got better production.
We do.
Okay. All right.
We feel better now.
All right.
And that was suspended solids, not what we thought it was that was in the water.
But he didn't say what the solids. It could be anything. That is a generic term, right? I mean, it's totally air. Generic. There could be good things in the air, bad things in the air.
Yes.
Right? It's just a suspended solid right there. Oh, my gosh. All right. All right. We got it all worked out. All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Thanks for putting up with us.
Thanks,
David
St.
Pierre, Executive Director of the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District of Greater Chicago, and Trey Clark, Director of Strategy Uptake, a Chicago-based predictive analytics platform. All right. Coming up, we have got Judy's News, and then we're going to check in, too, with our Bears insider, Adam Hogue.
Nice.
Coach will be here as well. Coach Fox. Or some...
You might not recognize him, though. I think he shaved the beard. We'll ask Hogue about that.
Yeah, which is good because he was starting to look agitated when he was wearing the beard.
New look.
It was kind of a. Maybe for job interviews he's going. Who knows? We'll find out all of that. But first, Violetta with the WGN Traffic Trouble Spots. Hey, this is my song. Chicago Bears! And tell me about a team formation!
That's not how it goes.
Formation! With your team formation! And another rest. I always sing along to the bouncy ball on the big screen.
That helps.
That does help, Coach.
Especially when you had a few drinks. You know,
yeah,
when you're,
it's the only way to do
game.
That. All right. It's the Monday of Bears Week 9.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They ended the first half of the season 3-5, took mm-hmm. a bye week.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're back.
They're back.
They're practicing. They're having thoughts. And our own Bears insider, Adam Hogue, has thoughts with them. In the media scrum today, we learned that Coach Fox has shaved his beard. That's the biggest story of the day.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's get the important news out of the way.
Perfect.
It does appear that John Fox shaved at some point during the bye week. However, it is already starting to grow back a little bit.
So gotta refresh.
There's still somewhat of a beard there.
Kind of scratchy.
Yeah.
Little stubble. The other news, maybe a little bit more important than the beard talk with John Fox.
Something else?
Zach Miller may be returning home soon. Is that correct, Adam Hogue, that Zach Miller, who's been in a New Orleans hospital, could be
you
back
believe
in Chicago?
This? He has been in a New Orleans hospital for 8 days.
Oh my gosh.
I believe he's on his way back now, actually. He was heading back today, tonight, and should be able to see. He hasn't seen his kids in a week. They've been back here with his mother because his wife has been down in New Orleans with him. It's been just a crazy situation. And he, that serious surgery he had on his leg just to repair the artery.
They haven't
even dealt with the knee yet. You know, once he gets back to Chicago, they'll start to look at the damage that's to the ligaments and the dislocation of the knee, and he's got a long, long road ahead.
Long road ahead to walk again. Let's take football off the table for just a moment.
Could be nerve damage.
Yeah, and that's all I've been thinking about for the week. Forget football.
Yeah.
This is about hoping that he has three little kids, and hopefully he's able to go on and be able to play with them and. Just have a happy, healthy life because that I have never heard of that. Yeah. And all my time around football in my life, I have never heard of somebody potentially losing their leg.
It was an unspeakable injury when you saw it.
It was.
Right?
I mean, it was so hard to watch.
It's one of those, and it goes down with the Theismann break and all the the other really horrifying injuries that we've seen throughout the years of the NFL. But this is. To me, you know, in terms of Bears injuries, this has got to go down as just one of the, toughest because, you know, we could all talk about the controversy about the catch and whether it was a touchdown and you know that's all so minor now compared to what he's been through, but it's one of those things that will be everybody will think about that and talk about that from this generation of Bears fans because he was a great. Like hustle player, right? He was a quarterback, gigantic quarterback in college in the BCS,
FCS.
I'm sorry.
He played at Nebraska Omaha.
Right. Neb Omaha, and he was a quarterback, and he was quite good. And that's tough there, right? Because I mean, that's North Dakota State and places like that that are, you know, big kinds of programs. And then he converted in the NFL. There was a guy that they thought, this is a great athlete. They converted him to the NFL. And he ends up as a tight end. He didn't play, you know, he had other injury issues, right, earlier in his career?
A lot. He's been through major broken limbs and
really?
Things that have held him back throughout his career. And he's come back from all of them. And the Bears, I give them credit because he actually went through the regime change between Phil Emery and to Ryan Pace. That was when he was hurt, and he had spent that whole last season where Phil Emery was here basically in the video room doing anything he could to help out.
Right.
That shows you what Zach Miller was, because he was out for the year, but we saw him every single day sitting in those meeting rooms. Most of the players who are out for the year, they go home and they relax, and you don't see him around the building all that much. He was there every day, just said, hey, can I help out in any way? Can I help with the video? And that's what he did. He sat there, watched film, he helped put clips together for the players. And when Phil Emery got fired and Ryan Pace came in, you know, he had such a good reputation around the league already, even though he hadn't played that much, that Ryan Pace knew about him and heard about how he had helped the year before and said, all right, we're going to keep you around here. And sure enough, he comes out and has some success the last couple of years, which is why he's still part of this team at this point.
He's going to be a coach in the NFL.
Gee, you
he
hope
could
so.
Be. Yeah.
You hope
if
so.
He wants to be.
So much heart, right? You just saw that when he was in his hospital bed, and he's, you know, as you said, they were worried he'll never walk again. There were worries about his life and what could have happened, and he's asking, "Hey, was that a touchdown? Did I get it, coach?"
Yeah.
And you just think about that.
Hey, Adam, I hate to even mention the name because we've moved past him, but I'm going to bring up Mike Glennon here. And here's why, because your podcast brother, Adam Johns, who writes for the Sun-Times, had a great piece this weekend about how Mark Sanchez has been a mentor to Mitch Trubisky. And it was a great read, great details on what Sanchez is doing to show him how to be an NFL quarterback. And the whole time I'm thinking, what is Mike Glennon's role here? What did they ever have in mind for Mike Glennon? Because if it was for him to be the starter for a year and Mitch Trubisky to be the backup, and he was sort of in that mentor role, and now you see Sanchez doing all of that, what is his role? What was the thought process? Because I still can't wrap my head around why they even signed him.
Well, I know. It's tough. The thing is, they never thought he was going to be as bad as he was. And maybe they should have seen it coming, but he was never that bad in Tampa. The one thing he did in Tampa was he didn't turn the ball over that much. Like, that was part of his scouting report. And so for him to come to Chicago in those four games, turn the ball over as much as he did, I think it really caught everyone off guard. But it obviously looks like a terrible signing at this
point. And Sanchez is looking like a great signing, right? Or at least having him around Trubisky? Because is he kind of...
Yeah, well, I wouldn't take this story too much out of context. Glennon is still a good teammate and somebody who's helping out a lot. And I'll give him a lot of credit because he has not sulked. He's been in there helping Mitch Trubisky every single day. And if you watch on the sidelines...
Well, what else does he have to do? He's getting paid $24 million or something, right?
And that's why he's still here. I mean, I think if he was making nothing or, you know, minimum wage, and he would be out of here at this point. But he's on the books. He's not a bad teammate. So you keep him around and he's helping. I think... The question kind of is, why is Sanchez still around? Well, you saw Adam Johns' story, and that's why.
All right, your thoughts on the second half of the season. What do you keep an eye on other than Mitch Trubisky's development? And they've got a pretty winnable game right out of the break here.
They do. First time the Bears have been favored over the Packers since
2008. It feels that way.
No, definitely not in 68, I can tell you that.
Yeah, not then.
2008, a game in which the Bears won at Soldier Field 20-17. 3-point win. They are 3-point favorites right now over the Green Bay Packers, which is the first time they've been favored all year. Look, the schedule's a lot easier in the second half, guys. The defense is playing great. I think we've learned through the first half of the season that the defense is legitimate.
Yeah,
I think there's minimum, and I mean this, minimum, the Bears should go 4-4 in the second half of the season, and I think
that'd
5-3.
Put
I think
right...
5-3 is attainable.
Well,
what's obtainable?
5-3. So they end up 8-8.
Oh.
I mean, that's the problem is, you know, you end up 6-10, and I think there's going to be an argument to keep John Fox at 6-10.
I doubled how many games I won from last year. Look at that. Yay.
It's improvement.
What does he have? What do they have to do with the second half, Adam, for him to actually keep his job?
Well, I think more of the same. You know, David Hart, he came out with a column today in the Chicago Tribune saying that John Fox has done more good than bad this season. And I think when you look at – when you zoom in on some of the coaching decisions within games and some of the challenges and the clock management, there's a lot to be –
And play calling in general.
No.
Yeah.
I will not have this. I will not have revisionist history about what we have seen. You know, there are 11 guys per side in the NFL on any given play, right? The differential, and these are great athletes. These are the best of the best. The best football players in the world right here. And by position, these guys are amazing. You see, I mean, the physicality, the ability, Tariq Cohen, right? That just a, that one video alone of him catching the balls, jumping backwards, right?
So great.
Upside down. Do you know what great athletes he's got? What is the differential between successful teams and not successful teams? It's coaching. It is always, always, always coaching. Injuries are a problem. There's no question. If your stars go down, it's tough. You can ask, you know, what's it? Green Bay. How they're feeling about this.
Mm-hmm.
However, we actually have players in position who can play these positions, and they're not coaching to what the strengths are, except on the defensive side of the ball. And you got to give a ton of credit right now to the coordinator, because he's seeing, and the 3-4 is tough, right?
It's working.
It's working for them, right? It's the 3-4 is not the dominant defense in the league at the moment. And it is, and so it's a decision that you have to make, and you have to draft for it, you have to commit to it, and that's what they're doing, and they're doing a good job. The clock management and the play calling on the offensive side is just a mystery to me. What the hell they're thinking about, especially with a rookie quarterback?
It is. Let me give you three bullet points that makes this a pro.
I got a heart out real fast. 1, 2, 3.
Okay, you got to keep Trubisky's development in mind.
Yep.
First. You cannot lose the locker room. Let's not forget what happened after they fired Lovie Smith. And three, you mentioned it. You cannot lose Vic Fangio. You have to keep Vic Fangio the defensive coordinator.
Right. Or head coach. Either way. I think that's if he wants it. I guess that's the question. All right. Thank you very much, Adam Hogue.
All right. Thanks, Adam.
Here is Violetta with the WGN Traffic Trouble Spot.